This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today, Nick Tumpas, is saying goodbye to a long career at New Hampshire's largest department, Health and Human Services. Tumpas began with DHHS in the 70s, then went to the private sector and worked in technology for two decades. But in the early 2000s, public service called again. He went back to Health and Human Services, becoming deputy commissioner, acting commissioner, and then finally commissioner in 2007. The department he's overseen is responsible for a huge portfolio in the Granite State: restaurant inspections, foster care, infectious disease tracking, Medicaid, mental health services, just to name a few. And under Tumpas, DHHS has had its challenges, including adjusting to new rules from the Affordable Care Act, implementing a new medical marijuana law, and responding to a rising opioid addiction epidemic. Today in The Exchange, Commissioner Tumpas joins us on these issues and much more as he prepares to leave office on Friday. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Commissioner Tumpas, welcome back for your swan song interview.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you for having me.
Well, is this department, I just listed a couple of things that it does, but there's so much more. I think Finance Chairman Neil Kirk said in a recent hearing that if you're not awed by the number of things that DHHS does, you're not paying attention. Is DHHS doing too many things?
DHHS is, I think, one of the most vital organizations within the state. I do believe that there is significant value in terms of having it as a comprehensive and a cohesive organization. One of the things that we were talking before we started, that a number of the different programs are siloed, meaning the funding is coming for a specific purpose by the federal government or the state government. What we're trying to do is really step back and take a look at the populations that we serve and look at them in a more holistic way. And I think there's real value in terms of having an organization that has a public health, has a medical and a health side of it, as well as has a human services side, so that we can look at not just whatever the issue is that somebody is coming to the department because they have an issue, but looking at the individual in a more holistic way and saying, I can't make anybody healthier and more independent without looking at all aspects of what that individual is about. So I think there's something that's very, very significant in terms of having that all within one organization, that it is complex, that there is a number of things that are there is absolutely correct. But as you will find with any large organization like this, it really takes a team. And I have really been blessed over the years to have such a great team.
When you started, Commissioner Tumpas, in the 70s, I think it was called the Department of Welfare, right, back then?
Back then it was called, I think it was called the Division of Welfare.
Division of Welfare, okay.
And so it had the social services. It didn't have, I think, the full portfolio of what it is that we have right now.
So is this a good thing that it's gotten so big? Because some people feel like it's kind of unwieldy.
It is big. I don't know if I would agree that it's unwieldy, but it is. It certainly is complex. But again, I think you have to look at it from the standpoint of what does it provide as an opportunity for us to try to do better and look at somebody in a more holistic way.
Well, looking over your tenure, the sort of second go-round, if I could put it that way, from the early 2000s where you came in and pretty quickly moved up to commissioner. Since that time period, Commissioner Tumpas, almost 15 years ago, the state of New Hampshire has seen increasingly dramatic political shifts. And you know this, the legislature switching from Republican to Democrat and back again. Some of these shifts pretty dramatic, 2006, 2010, come to mind. What's been the impact on you of these giant political swings back and forth?
From my standpoint, I think it's vitally important that I know I'm in a political role, but I try not to play politics. So when I talk with people, as I've told legislators both on the Republican as well as Democrat and everything in between, is that I need to tell you what you need to hear. It may not be what it is that you want to hear
directly.
So by just providing the data, providing the policymakers with what it is that they need for information, they are the ones that set the policy. I propose some things, as does the governor, will propose a number of different things that we do not get all the resources that we would like to have is clear. But what we try to do is when we go and say we need you to have one of those shifts that you were talking about, one of the darkest periods that I faced was at one point where we needed to cut $400 million out of what our proposed spend was. And it was just it was decimating.
That was probably in 2010, I'm guessing.
It may have been a little bit earlier than that because it was really right around the time of the recession. When I took the responsibility as the commissioner in August of 2007, the country had not yet formally gone into recession. That happened it was declared in December of 2007, but we were seeing it. And I think in the upcoming budgets that we really, really saw what strain that put on the state because the caseloads, as you had indicated, had skyrocketed and the resources just weren't there. And so when we did that, we were asked to do that. I went to the finance chair at the time, Representative Kirk, and said, I will tell you, I'll come up with a list. And they're not prioritized, but I will come up with a list and I will tell you what the implications of it are going to be. And I do recall back then when we were going through the list and several of the policymakers were sitting there and just looking very uncomfortable. And one of them looked at me and said, you are not making this easy. And I said, it's not meant to be easy. there are real people that are really being involved here. I recognize that we have limitations in terms of the resources, but I need to let you know what the trade-offs are going to be. If you don't fund it at this particular level, then here's what the implication of that is going
to
be.
Right. So good timing on your part to take over the reins of this Human Services Department right at a time when the economy, you're right, was right on the brink of tanking.
I think we had, specifically here in the state of New Hampshire, that one of the things I've spent a fair amount of time over in these years up in the North Country and realizing that it is a very different environment. And they were dealing with a number of the challenges that the southern part of the state didn't really start to see until late 2007, 2008. Yet they had been dealing with it much before that and really took a lot of lessons in terms of their perseverance, the way they worked together in order to try to resolve some of the issues. So it was long before it was formally we were in recession, we were dealing with it here.
You know, Commissioner Tumpas, you mentioned this sort of over the years, this very sober approach. Here's the data, not getting political. Here's the impact. As you know, activists for some of the causes that you work on have been frustrated by this approach. They say, you know, Nick Tumpas needs to be more passionate. He needs to rattle the cages. He needs to, you know, maybe stomp his foot a little bit and say, look, this isn't right.
I am about as passionate as you're going to find in this particular role. But there are I do recognize and respect the fact that there is a process, there's an approach in order to do this. I advocate strongly for all the different areas within the department when we go through the budget process. We advocate strongly going through with our phase of the budget and then working with the governor, then going into the House, Senate, and the Committee of Conference. So I advocate very, very strongly, as does my staff, in terms of what it is that we need and what the implications are going to be if we don't get those type of resources. That being said, I can't put myself into a position where I'm advocating for one because if I advocate for one, somebody else is going to say, well, you advocated for that one. Why don't you advocate for this? Being the commissioner of the department, you have a very unique perspective on this in that I sometimes equate it to a maze where you're sitting up above, standing on top of the maze and seeing where all the intersects are going to be. we have that perspective within the department where I respect greatly the advocates for the elderly, the disabled, the mentally ill, for children, for whatever group that we're talking about. But I've got to look at it in a more holistic way.
Our phone number here in the exchange,
which is difficult at times.
1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're sitting down with Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas, who leaves office on Friday. He's been head of the state's largest agency for 8 eventful years, although at DHHS for a lot longer than that. You can join us with your questions and comments for Commissioner Tumpas, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So, Commissioner Tumpas, so much happened during your time at DHHS, but I did want to pull out some of the biggies. And let's talk first, if we could please, about the Affordable Care Act and the Medicaid expansion that New Hampshire signed on to as a part of that. Just broadly first, and then we'll get into details. What's been the impact of Medicaid expansion so far as you see it?
The impact of Medicaid expansion has been hugely significant. There are now we're approaching 46,000 people who are now enrolled in the program. This gives them access right now to health care that in a planned way. One of the things I like to point out is that for these 46,000 people, it wasn't that they didn't get care before. They got care in really inappropriate locations, and they waited too long, and sometimes that would then drive the cost elsewhere.
Emergency rooms.
So what we are seeing right now is, and the hospitals have reported this, you're seeing less use of the ER for issues that are don't really need the ER. With more people having insurance, it impacts the hospitals and their level of uncompensated care. That would go down. I don't have the specific numbers. It's a little bit early for that. But anecdotally, everything is pointing in the right direction. If you talk to the community health centers, where a significant portion of the number of people that they serve were uninsured, now they are insured. That strengthens the safety net of that particular organization and able to better provide services for those folks, areas of mental health. One of the key issues that the expansion has done is made available substance use disorder services and mental health services to this population. That is so hugely significant because under the current Medicaid program, while we offer mental health services, we don't have a substance use disorder benefit for the Medicaid population. Come July of this year, we will. And that's hugely – it's not related to the health protection program, but it is something that we argued you're going to provide those services to 44,000 people, and there's another 130,000 people that are not getting those.
Under traditional Medicaid.
Under traditional Medicaid. So we are seeing that there are savings. There are greater efficiencies that are being in the communities. We're seeing a strengthening of the community. We're also seeing the fact that there are health outcomes. We have a whole quality program where we're collecting the data and actually seeing that we're moving the needle in terms of the overall health of the people that are being served.
What do you think the legislature is going to do, Commissioner Tumpas? As you know, this Medicaid expansion is only authorized through the end of this year. This is going to be an early vote in the legislature. Whether they should continue with this expanded Medicaid program. You want to make a prediction? I know you don't like to play politics, but...
Well, my clear hope is that the legislature will do what I believe is the right thing and reauthorize the program. How that's going to play itself out is really up for the policymakers. I do believe that there are people on both sides of the aisle that want to make this happen. Clearly, the governor wants to make this happen. The department wants to make this happen. I think virtually every one of the different groups out there that really want to make this happen. It is just too hugely significant to the people of the state to let it just go away.
A couple more quick questions on this, and then there's a lot more that I want to ask you about, including medical marijuana, including the mental health settlement and so forth. But Commissioner Tumpas, one of the concerns about Medicaid expansion was that people would have coverage in name only, that not enough New Hampshire doctors would be interested in seeing this population, because even though now they're covered, it isn't the full freight payment that people with regular private health insurance have. What has happened? Do people with Medicaid under this expansion actually have access to doctors?
We have no evidence whatsoever, Laura, that people who are eligible for the program are having problems getting access to care. And in fact, the legislature specifically required us to pay rates to hospitals, providers, and others that were benchmarked against Medicare that were different from what the Medicaid rates were specifically. So if you were going to add another 40 to 50,000 people there, conceivably, if you were paying what the traditional Medicaid rate with a concern was, that maybe some of those people wouldn't be able to get access to the care. Well, now under the Health Protection Program, as the name is called, the services that are being provided for that population through hospitals, individual providers, and others are really benchmarked against Medicare rates, which are at a higher level than what Medicaid, traditional Medicaid is. And there is absolutely no evidence, no data at all to say that people are having difficulty getting access to services.
For a show I was preparing for recently, I was looking at a lot of the substance abuse treatment providers around the state, just looking at their advertising, how they present themselves. And a lot of them, Commissioner Tumpa, said, sorry, we don't take Medicare or Medicaid.
The substance use issue is probably one of the biggest challenges slash opportunities that we have. That when the Health Protection Program was coming in, we wanted to put a full substance use disorder benefit into that. The issue that we had was that the capacity didn't exist in the community. And so that's been There just weren't enough providers. And many of the providers were smaller providers. And in order to get into this, to be able to provide these type of services that would be Medicaid reimbursable, they needed to change some of their models. They needed additional staff. They needed additional facility and so forth. So it's taken time. So what we did was we phased that in. And that's taking its time in order to do that. Now, again, there's yet another level that's going to have to happen come July of 2016, because we're going to make that available to the full Medicaid population.
So there'll be even more people seeking these services.
Even more. So, that, again, is it a challenge? Yes, but it is also an opportunity now for people, because I don't think that there's a family around that has not seen what the impact of a substance use putting aside for the moment right now the issues that we're having with heroin and the opiates, but it's been a longstanding issue for people to be able to get treatment for those services.
So this is from the Associated Press quoting here. Medical copayments will increase January 1st this year for people on the state's Medicaid expansion plan with incomes higher than twice the federal poverty line, which is about $12,000. For an individual. Inpatient hospital services, including visits for behavioral health, in other words, mental health, and substance abuse, will now cost $125. There's some concern, Commissioner Tumpas, that, you know, this is going to discourage people from even seeking those services. If you're making $12,000 a year, a copay of $125 is a lot.
It is. But again, that we did that in line with what the federal government would required and what we were required to do. It also is capped to 5% of the person's income. So that's something that we are in the process of going through and tracking. That we have to have a mechanism for tracking it. So I believe we have deferred the implementation of the co-pays until, I believe it's March, in order to allow our systems and everything to get caught up with that.
Could there be a discouragement factor there?
It's potential, but again, it is it is something that the people are being asked to pay, but the provider is not turning the people away if they're not able to pay that.
Our phone number again for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. Coming up with Commissioner Tumpas, we'll turn to medical marijuana, also the opioid epidemic, and some other issues that his department has faced over the years. You can join us too at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting with outgoing DHHS Commissioner Nick Tumpas. He's been at the Department of Health and Human Services since the early 2000s and has been commissioner for the last 8 years. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Commissioner Tumpas, let's go right to our listeners and bring John in, calling in from Manchester. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're in The Exchange. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
Commissioner, my question was basically, why did it take 2 years and a terminally ill woman suing the state to get medical marijuana cards issued to patients?
John, thanks for the question. Something I wanted to ask you about, Commissioner Tumpas. Go ahead.
That's a great question. When the legislature authorized the law, there were two key components to it. One was the issuance of the cards to basically say that you are authorized to basically use the product. And then the second part of it, and that was, quote unquote, the easy part in terms of going through, getting the rules and so forth. And the way the legislature and the law was set up, that those had to be done by date certain back last year. And we did that. We met that particular goal. The other part of it was setting up of the four regionally based alternative treatment centers. And in order to do that, we had to go through a request for proposal, evaluate those proposals. Then once the selection process was completed, then the treatment centers needed to get the approval from the local communities where they wanted to basically locate.
That so takes local time. Input was required because there was some question about
basically,
that.
Basically, yeah, absolutely local input, because if you're going to want to set it up in one particular area, the local community basically needs to say you're complying with all the zoning, all the other type of ordinances that are there. It's not the state's call as to where they go. It really is up to the local community. And so they needed to do process, because something like this is obviously – there are a number of people that, as John is saying, it's vitally important to them. I've never seen an issue in the state where you have the polar ends of the political spectrum working arm in arm together, because it is personal. It is deeply personal, as John is indicating right now. And so in order to get the treatment centers, first part of it was getting the approval on the part of the community. And then the other part of it is then getting into place the growing centers, because you can't transport the product across the state lines. So,
and there's no grow your own option like they have in other states.
No, there is not. That's specifically prohibited on the part of the law. And so in order to do all that, there's time that it takes in order to do that. Right now, we believe that we'll be in a position for the treatment centers to really begin the operation and dispensing of the product in the April timeframe. That's what we're looking at. But has it taken long? Yes, I would not say that it's taken longer than what we believed it was going to take, because we had to do it. We needed to do this program responsibly and with integrity because of the volatility of the issue. And if we had not done it and provide all the appropriate safeguards, security, protections and so forth for the community and for others, you have one misstep and it sets the whole program back. And so we needed to be very deliberate in terms of how we were going about implementing it. That it took time, absolutely, but we wanted to make sure that we did it right.
Did it take other states this long? From what I have read, New Hampshire's been pretty slow compared to other places.
It depends on what the law is. But once you get everything in place, the alternative treatment centers, they again, some other states you could grow it, or you could do other type of things. But with our state, you said you have to grow it. And so if you open up a if you get the approval today, tomorrow you can't, because it doesn't grow that fast. I'm not an expert in that part of it, but it doesn't grow that fast. It takes time.
You know, Commissioner Tumpas, some folks say it wasn't you guys at DHHS that slowed this down, but that you faced resistance from the Attorney General's office, the Department of Justice here in the state, about handing out ID cards. Were DOJ and the Attorney General pressuring you to slow down?
No, I would not call it slow down. We saw it there once Ms. Horan had filed the lawsuit against us, and we had to really take a look at that and say, if we allow one to go across the border, what about
everybody else?
Now, fortunately, the numbers that we're talking about were not that significant. So we have subsequently issued cards. We did seek the advice and the opinion of the Attorney General's office, but I would not at all say that the AG's office or anybody else was pressuring us not to issue the cards.
John, thank you for the call. Again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's your chance to talk with Nick Tumpas, Commissioner of Health and Human Services. He's getting ready to leave office on Friday. We're looking at all the issues he's worked on during his long time at the agency. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. And Commissioner Tumpas, I did want to ask you about the opioid epidemic. There's been so much concern, really just in recent years, as early as 2010. We weren't even talking about this as much. Addiction to heroin, fentanyl, other opioids in New Hampshire, shocking numbers of people dying from overdoses. The legislature, as you know, is looking at a number of proposals, from improving insurance coverage to mandating drug education in schools to requiring doctors now use the prescription drug monitoring program. Which of all these proposals that have been just sort of put out there, picking one or two, Commissioner Tumpas, do you think will make the biggest difference in helping us beat back this problem?
Well, I think I have to step back a little bit, Laura, from your question, and create a little bit of a context. The issue of addiction is something that's been with us for a long time. I serve on the Governor's Commission on Alcohol, and over the course of my time as the Commissioner of the Department, the ever-present issue related to alcohol. Alcohol is probably the most pervasive issue, and it has more of an impact, has more people dying and being impacted by that than this piece of it that we're dealing with right now. And the issue there is it just takes longer, whereas heroin and the fentanyl becomes immediate.
To get addicted, you mean?
Not only get addicted, but the circumstance you and I were talking about off air, where somebody experiments, and because there's absolutely no quality control and so forth, you have no idea what it is you're getting. You have no idea what the potency is, and now with these dealers that are lacing it with fentanyl, a synthetic drug that it's a legitimate drug to treat cancer, but now they're using it, and it just exponentially increases the potency of the product and becomes almost lethal right out of the gate. But over the years that I've been in this role, we ever present dealing with the issue of alcohol, and then we were dealing with the methamphetamines. We were dealing with the prescription drug abuse. We were dealing with the crack cocaine. We were dealing with the spice, that synthetic drug that was happening, where the epicenter of that was in Manchester. I don't know what the next thing is going to be. So what we have to do is we're looking at this is to take a very comprehensive approach. I'm not sure that there's one Band-Aid that's basically going to solve all ills. I know that perhaps one of the most significant meetings that I've been in over the years, when I talked along with my counterparts from safety, the Attorney General, and corrections, where we met with a number of police chiefs from across the state, and they said we need two things: we need prevention in order to work, especially with kids, to get them so that they don't go in this particular direction, and then the other is that we need treatment services, so what is most effective? It is going to take a range of different actions. And I think a number of the things that were put forward by the task force, that was put forward by the legislature, I think are legitimate things to do. The governor's office had come out with a number of recommendations that we believe that those are important, but I'm not sure that there's any one silver bullet that's going to solve that. I do think that the prescription drug monitoring program is something that is pretty significant, because for certain of these type of things, people will doctor shop, I think it's important to have that, to be able to provide the doctors with and the other prescribers, because it's not just doctors that are doing it.
How much pushback are you getting, Commissioner Tumpas, from docs and other prescribers who say, look, you know, we're the professionals, state of New Hampshire, don't tell us how to dispense medicine?
Again, that's part of that is we have the Board of Medicine. You have others that really need to weigh in. On that, I'm not a doctor, so I have to depend on. That's one of the issues in this particular role, is that you'll have two people screaming at you, equally passionate from two different perspectives, and you have to try to strike a balance on that. So that's an issue right now for the policymakers and for the governor to deal with.
You know, we talked earlier about treatment and Medicaid coverage and how that's growing. What are the limits of private coverage for substance abuse, Commissioner Tumpas? I've heard of families spending tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, worth it for sure to save their loved ones' lives, but that's a giant bite out of most families' finances.
It is. And this is one of the things that I think that the work on the part of the governor's office, the work on the part of the legislature, has really highlighted that issue of parity, to make sure insurers are providing that particular coverage and so forth. Like anything else, when you with something that is a sea change in terms of trying to make this type of a change and putting this type of a benefit into place, there's going to be a little bit of a rocky start on that. And I don't think that this is anything different. It will work its way out over a period of time. But the key thing is being able to get people access to those services, because I don't think that there is one family or one person that I could look at and talk to right now that has not had a direct issue related to a family member, a friend, a colleague, and so forth. It is just such a pervasive issue that right now, and again, just trying to put a Band-Aid on it just is not the best way to go about doing it.
Again, our phone number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. We're taking your questions and comments for outgoing Health and Human Services Commissioner Nick Tumpas. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Send us an email or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Commissioner Tumpas, I did want to ask you about a group of folks who've been very active in the state for a long time and have had some frustrations in recent years, and that's people whose loved ones have developmental disabilities. During your time as commissioner, the department was heavily criticized for its handling of a fund to help people with developmental disabilities. 100 people were still waiting for services, and then it turned out the fund had a $20 million surplus, and there were a lot of angry headlines, Commissioner Tumpas, as you know, about people saying, whoa, while I was waiting, they had the cash to help me out. So what happened?
This is a complex issue. What you're talking about is the waiting list for people with developmental disabilities, acquired brain disorder, or in-home support services for kids with autism.
And we always hear about this at budget time, how much the list is going to grow or shrink.
Right. And so... one biennium ago, there was very little put into the wait list. This last biennium, the 14-15 period, there was a fairly significant increase in terms of the amount of dollars that went into that. In the first year of the biennium, state fiscal year 14, we lapsed, meaning that there were dollars available that did not get spent. There was $6 million that was lapsed. We began looking at that, working with the area agencies, because while the department authorizes the services, approves the budget for each individual, it is really the area agencies, the 10 area agencies around the state, that have the responsibility to provide or make available the use of those particular services.
So you ship the money out to them, and then they provide the services
directly. They do the assessment of an individual. They come back to us and say, we believe Nick needs X amount of dollars in order to provide the type of services that he needs. The department then approves that. then so now the area agency has an individual budget for NIC. Then it comes time to deliver the services for NIC. One of the issues that is a very significant issue that the area agencies and all other areas are facing is workforce, being able to find adequate workforce. So if you can't find – so if NIC is approved to get services beginning on July 1 and you've allocated $1,000 a month for that, so that's $12,000 over the year. If you can't find somebody to provide those services to the level that you wanted in that first 6 months, that means that $6,000 is not being spent. That's going to lapse.
Wow, so that's a workforce issue.
Part of it is a workforce issue. Part of it is just all the planning and all the other type of things. We're having detailed conversations with the area agencies, their finance managers, our staff, and so forth. But ultimately, it is the responsibility of the agency in order to get everything in place in order to be able to provide the services. But that being said, if somebody gets sick or they can't find the workforce, there are going to be dollars that are there that will lapse, if you will. And in the second year of the biennium, despite everything that we were trying to do, we ended up with a $14 million lapse, and that's with the $20 million. So we're in this budget, the budget we're in right now, we fully funded the wait list. There were 112 people that were from state fiscal year 15 that were being carried over, and then another 150 in each of the next 2 years that would come off, and those are all fully funded in the budget. Now it's a matter of the execution, if you will, in terms of making sure that those services are being provided. If they're not, some of those dollars will lapse.
So it's a workforce issue in terms of the people who actually provide the services. How much is it a workforce issue on the DHHS end, Commissioner Tumpas, in terms of, the person needed to just sort of process all that paperwork that you talked about? And by the way, that process sounds extensive.
It is extensive, but again, we're also talking about an aggregate. When I take a look at the amount of dollars that we're talking about, it's not an insignificant amount of dollars as a portion of our budget. Right now, I don't believe that the department, despite some of the shortfalls that we do have in staffing, I don't believe that we're the bottleneck for the approval of those prior authorizations that need to be done. But again, I don't want to sit here and kind of point one way or the other. It is an us issue that we need to, meaning the area agencies along with the department, that we need to work collaboratively, and we are, in terms of being able to work through this, because it is our intention, it is our desire that every one of those dollars that's authorized gets approved and utilized in an appropriate way in order to basically help the individuals that need those particular services. It is certainly not something that we're sitting there holding back or trying to slow things down so that we can, quote unquote, save some money.
Is it just that, again, I'm interested in this idea of not enough people to carry out this work? Is it that the state is aging, not enough young people going into this, or people just aren't interested? They're more interested in so-called science, technology, engineering, and math. I mean, why aren't people going into these careers?
Well, part of it is I do think that probably one of the most pervasive issues and challenges that the next commissioner and indeed all the state is going to face is the issue of workforce.
All right. We'll close it out there, but we'll be back in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're sitting down with outgoing DHHS Commissioner Nick Tumpas. Join us with your questions and comments for Commissioner Tumpas as we cover the many areas that he has worked on during his many years at the agency. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Commissioner Tumpas, right back to our listeners. And let's go to Wendy first. She's calling in from Rollinsford. Hi, Wendy. Go ahead. You're in The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, Laura, and hi, Commissioner. I have a question. I'm really at a standstill right now. Quickly, I have an adult child. Well, she's 31. She's always a child to me. But she was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma, which is a cancer at age 2. She's had a hemipelvectomy, best doctors we can find. My problem now is that she suffers with chronic pain and has since she was 12 on very heavy-duty pain medications. All surgeries have been done. We've actually, when she was 28, put her in an assisted living to see if that would work. But to put a 28-year-old in an assisted living facility, which was the things that she needed, but not to be with elderly people. It was very difficult. I want to know what there is for this type of a situation for young adults that are suffering from medical issues and also that fine line of addiction. Where can we place them? She needs help, and I'm at wit's end right now.
And, Wendy, do you have private insurance, by the way?
No, I don't. I don't. I do, but I can't cover her, so she's only covered by Medicaid. Because I never knew the secret about being able to have her under my Medicare at the time.
Wendy, I'm so sorry. What a struggle for you and your daughter.
It is. And
well, Commissioner Topaz, it's interesting. And she's got her medical needs met, but a 28-year-old doesn't want to live with a bunch of, 70-somethings.
So what I would ask you to do is let me give you a phone number to call and to call my office. Let them know that you are calling in on the exchange and that I will then get you in touch with somebody within my department that can walk you through what the options are and has much more in-depth knowledge about some of the options and such that you need. That number is, if you got a pencil handy, it's 271-9446. Again, 271-9446. That directly comes into my office.
All right, Wendy, good luck to you and your daughter. And let's take another call. This is Ron in Ware. Hi, Ron. Go ahead. You're in the exchange with Commissioner Tumpas.
Hi, Laura. Hi, Commissioner. How are you?
I'm
fine.
Well.
I have a very probably unpopular opinion based on this, but, I have two young boys that are going through the school system, and I have a stay-at-home wife raising our kids. And I want to know why nobody's addressing the fact that This is a personal choice of people doing heroin, and why the majority of taxpayers are once again fitting the bill for people's bad decisions. I mean, our taxes are outrageous, and now we're also piggybacking on an addiction that people are doing that's wrecking their own life, and that's their own problem as far as I'm concerned. I've had friends that have died on heroin. Hey, they decided to put the needle in their arm. And I want to know why we as taxpayers are constantly having to pay for these people's bad decisions.
Well, and Ron, thank you for the question. And Commissioner Tumpas, we have gotten this question before on other shows on opioids. You know, cancer, not someone's fault. He's right. Nobody's forcing somebody to put the needle in.
It really is a generalization to say that everybody is choosing this. This is not just a bunch of junkies that are doing it. Historically, heroin overdose and so forth. But what's happening is that, and it gets in a little bit more involved, Laura, but there are a number of different pathways. A number of people, if you take a look at the number of people that have been impacted by the heroin thing, the distribution across the age range is pretty linear, if you will. So a number of people who are on prescription medications and so forth that they become too expensive, and they look for other alternatives. So you got a number of people that are dealing and struggling with pain, and they're turning to this partly because of an economic issue. So is there some of that somebody has made a bad choice? Yes, but to say that is the primary thing that is driving it, I don't think is accurate.
Talk about the circles, Commissioner Tumpas, of impact when someone, however they arrive at that decision to take heroin. And we're making it sound like it's a conscious yes or no. I know it's a lot more complicated than that. But there are ripples that you're hearing about throughout the state. So even if you feel the way Ron does, and I do hear other people say this, hey, it's not my fault.
Clearly,
I didn't make that choice.
Yes.
You hear other people who say, okay, but there's so many ripple effects now that we have to pay attention to this, whether we agree or not.
Well, you have to pay attention to it because if somebody is out there doing that, just in the past in the past several months where you've had people been killed in automobile accidents, Some who were one young lady back a number of months ago was killed while she was actually putting a needle in her arm. Now, she was the one that was killed, but it could have easily been somebody else coming in another direction that minding their own business, and now you have that. So
robberies up related to people seeking money for their opioids. Corrections costs.
Beyond if you're talking about that, it's when you look at that issue, it is corrections, it is safety, it is justice, it is the school system, it is the youth system in the state. It cuts across everything, not just the heroin and the opioid issue, but again, the broader issue of substance abuse.
Ron, thank you very much for the call. And again, we could talk a lot more
about
this
because
it's a big issue.
It's a big issue. And then some on it.
All right. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And from Dover, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. Islis on the air?
It's Isles.
Isles. Hi, Isles. I'm so sorry.
Hi, that's okay. I just have some questions. I struggle from heroin addiction. I'm in recovery and I'm trying to recover from it. And, trying to better my life, and I went to the doctors to get treatment for hepatitis C, and they say that, you know, I can't get it because I have healthy families and they won't cover it because my liver's not damaged enough. So what that said to me was, like, pretty much, you know, until your liver is damaged enough. So what went to my mind was, all right, so go out and drink some more and damage my liver more. And, you know, it's a struggle. I want to get rid of it, and I just had some questions on how I could go about getting treatment.
Wow. Okay. Well, Isles, thank you very much for calling in, Commissioner Tumpas.
Again, if I take it you were on the Medicaid program in the probably as part of the expansion, but I would continue to pursue that with the managed care organization.
The managed care organization, because Medicaid
healthy,
is
healthy
yeah,
families.
Right. Right. That's
I believe he referenced healthy families.
Well, Isles, good luck to you. Thank you for calling in. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email that came in. Person didn't give their name. The New Hampshire Coalition to End Homelessness recently came out with a report that stated homelessness in New Hampshire has stayed relatively stagnant within the last 3 years. This person says, what actions do homeless service agencies and the Bureau HHS, so I'm guessing that's Bureau of
Homeless and Housing Services.
Homeless and Housing Services, thank you, need to take in order to help this issue and find housing for individuals in the state. What isn't being done? I think we're actually planning a show around this issue, but if you could quickly address that, Commissioner Tempest.
The issue of housing, there's such a demand for housing across the board on a number of different areas. The Section 8 housing, there are a number of things that the Bureau is doing around rapid reentry, trying to get with people. The biggest thing that we can do with homelessness is to try to prevent it from happening in the first place. So this is another topic that you could spend a full hour talking about it. But the numbers are flat as they indicated. But finding the available housing stock across the state is a challenge because there's such a demand for housing on a number of different areas.
Commissioner Tumpas, I also want to ask you about another controversy that came up during your tenure pretty recently. The Lakeview Neuro Rehabilitation Center was ultimately closed just sometime in the past year after allegations of abuse and neglect, some of it pretty horrifying. NHPR has reported that going back years to the mid-90s, state regulators knew about problems at Lakeview and yet kept renewing Lakeview's license each year, giving the facility a clean bill of health. Given these oversight failures at Lakeview, what can we surmise, Commissioner Tumpas, about the other health facilities that the state is supposed to be overseeing? Drug rehab centers, hospitals, nursing homes. There's a lot of other facilities that you guys are supposed to be overseeing. So it kind of makes you wonder how well those are being overseen, given what happened at Lakeview.
Again, the Lakeview is, as Jack Rodolico has done an extensive amount of work on that. In a couple of minutes, I can't really respond to all of that. But we have taken a look at our internal processes related to the communication. The fact of the matter is that we do have fewer resources that are doing that. That issue of workforce that I can't remember if we talked about it on or off. Off the air, Laura, we have difficulty in terms of recruiting people into some of those particular roles. But again, I'm confident on all the other on the areas that we do a very, very good job in terms of the our regulatory management responsibility in terms of health facilities licensing, childcare licensing, and so forth. Are we resource constrained? Yes. The issue of Lakeview. Is a much more complex issue because the Lakeview issue really underscores an underlying issue that we do have in the state, and that is that there is an increasing number of these people with very, very significant and complex conditions that are you talked about silos earlier where you have a system that deals with developmental disabilities. You have a system that deals with mental illness. You have a system that deals with substance abuse. You have a system that deals with medical conditions.
When
you have things that cross over.
That's right.
All right. So you have somebody that now is somebody with a developmental disability that has a mental illness that has some aggressive behaviors. They don't fit neatly within one of those particular systems. And so we have to be more forward thinking in terms of what it is that we're going to do to deal with that population going forward, because it's the issue that Lakeview is an issue that we're learning from in terms of what we need to do moving forward. But the need for services for those individuals is not going to go away, and we have to be proactive about what we're going to do about that.
It does give pause, though, Commissioner, you know, given all the nursing homes, given the drug treatment centers, given the basic, you know, freestanding health clinic. That if DHHS was supposedly keeping an eye on Lakeview, it makes you wonder how close an eye they're keeping on all these other health facilities.
Again, I believe that DHHS was keeping an eye on Lakeview. There's also a number of rules and regulations and so forth that defined what it is that we needed to take a look at. That there could have been some different type of communications internally is clear. We have been addressing that piece of it, but you know, to say that there were issues at Lakeview, I'm certainly not going to say that there weren't issues at Lakeview, but to characterize and say based on that we've got a systemic problem in all the other areas, I wouldn't accept that.
Do you have enough people to keep an eye on these, again, roughly 1,000 other health facilities in the state?
It is a challenge. It certainly is a challenge in terms of being able to get, because partly is driven by what the rules and statute says, how often you need to go out and do the visit, what's entailed in that particular visit. And we had issues with the food protection program where, again, the number of facilities that we had to go out and license and the number of staff that we had and the lack of systems capability that we had. So again, part of what we've dealt with over the past number of years is that we have constantly been constrained in terms of the available human resources that we have in the department. And at some point, you reach that tipping point where some of these things, we just don't have the adequate resources in order to basically deal with it. But again, I'm confident that the work that the people are doing right now is basically meeting the mandate and then some. I know they're staying right on top of things. Again, the Lakeview is just one of those issues that I'm not particularly proud of that, but it is something that we are addressing.
Let's take another call, Commissioner Tumpas. This is Marianne in Concord. Hi, Marianne. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you, Laura, for taking this call.
Sure.
And Commissioner Tumpas, I just wanted you to know that right now I'm riding up with Rachel Tracy to the North Country, and we want everyone to know on this call what a terrific commissioner you have been for the last 8 years. You've supported the staff immensely. You've made so many changes that have been for the good for this state. And we just didn't want it to go without mentioning that you are really, truly one in a million, and we will miss you greatly.
All right. So, Marianne, clearly one of the staff. And
thank you.
All right. Nothing else to really say there, but Marianne, thank you for the call. And here's another question related to staffing, actually. This is from Lindsay in Dover. What advice or lessons would you share with the next generation of government employees coming through the ranks or someone who might be commissioner in the next 10 or 15 years? This is a really good question. Lindsay, thank you.
The issue of governing, that this is one of the challenges that we have, is that we have an aging workforce. And again, one of the things I am most proud about in my time as commissioner is having forged relationships with my fellow commissioners across the state. And this is an issue that we're all talking about, is what's the next generation of the workers going to be? Because it's not just HHS that is struggling with the issues related to workforce. I think as we start looking forward, people, especially younger people who are looking for a career in government, we really want to encourage that. But we have to embrace technology much more. We have to use some different type of techniques in terms of being able to motivate those type of individuals and so forth. It is truly an honor to serve people in government. So how we go about getting some of those folks in there and what advice that we can give them I wish I pondered that a little bit more. It's supposed to 1 minute to go here, but
well, it's tough because you hear about cutbacks, you hear about shortages, you hear about, you know, not enough people. So, you know, a young person listening might be thinking, maybe I'll just, you know, not go there.
Yeah. Well, again, it's what HHS is and any one of the agencies in the state, they're mission driven organizations. You really have to have an inherent desire in order to want to help people, whether it's through HHS or whether any one of the other agencies. What we have to do is really provide some of the tools and so forth that they've been used to in their lives to help them.
Well, Commissioner Tumpas, thank you very much for being with us today and over the years. I understand you're going on a cruise pretty shortly after this, so have a great time and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Laura. Appreciate
this is The Exchange on NHPR.